Lord have mercy. Hi, I'm Jim Barracks. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Jim.
And for you new folks, I'll also let you know that I also used to take too many drugs, smoke too many cigarettes, ate too much food, spent too much money, got married too damn much. I can tell you right now that I haven't had a cigarette in 32 years, haven't had a drink or drug in 34 years, and I haven't been married in 36 years. So they were all costing me a fortune. Don't think I came in here totally free of encumbrance. I came in, I was paying child support to two women and alimony to a third one. You know, it just absolutely floors me that I actually was able to save enough money to eat, you know. I also have to tell you that when I came in here, I was not this suave, handsome, debonair gentleman you see in front of you. My sponsor, she was a tough old bird, and she insisted I tell you exactly what I look like. So I was 44 years old. I had shoulder-length hair, headband, beard and a mustache, puka beads. Anybody remember puka beads? Rings on every finger, shirt with a big red tongue hanging off it, bell-bottom jeans, and sandals with little jingle bells on them. You could hear me coming down the aisle that first meeting. Ka-chink, 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 ka-chink. What I hate to tell you is that at that time, I was a local Allstate insurance agent. You were not in good hands. Oh, Lord have mercy. We do clean up very, very well, thank God, you know. I'll give you a little background. Oh, this thing moves. That's nice. That's okay. The first time that I got up to a podium, I had to read chapter 5, and the podium was shaking like that when I was up there. So, if it was a skateboard, I would have skated all around the place while I was talking, but that's a different story. Believe me, when I'll give you a little background. Now, we don't all have to get into the hows and the whys and the wherefores. I don't see anybody passing out tissues or anything, so I won't get into my story heavy. I can just say that I started off my life as a runner. Now, I don't know about you, but anytime things got hot and heavy, I ran. And I was telling Manny today, he was talking about riding across from Texas to L.A. on the boxcars. And I said, that's no big deal. When I was 3 years old, I was riding on boxcars. My folks came from Virginia on boxcars out to California to pick fruit. And today I went into my jewelry thing and I found their picker thing from CF Company Picker, 1940. And it's like, wow, you know, so my family was fruit pickers. So see, not all Mexicans got the good jobs. You know? We blondes got in there sometime too, you know. But yeah, at the age of 8, my folks moved me up from the farm down in Virginia up to Tenman Projects in upstate New York, where I had to start fighting with a switchblade just to survive. And I was terrified, and I had one of these deep southern accents. So whenever I was at school, it was yes, ma'am, and no, ma'am. And, of course, the gangs just loved that, and they tried to attack me. So I kind of stayed clear of them. And at 10 years old, my folks broke up, and I started hitchhiking. Like I said, I'm a runner. You know, if you can imagine, 10 years old, I'm leaving Buffalo, I'm out there hitchhiking, going to stay with a relative down in Virginia, then back to Buffalo, then I'd hitchhike and stay with my dad in Detroit, then back to Buffalo, then down to Baltimore with another relative, then back. You know, and this is 10, 11, 12 years old. I'm out there hitchhiking. 12 years old, New Year's Eve, my folks went out to a party, and I went into their closet, and I found a bottle of red wine. I drank the wine, I had fun, I threw up, and I passed out. 32 years later, the night before I came into AA, I was drinking red wine, had fun, threw up, and passed out. I could practically say my life was ditto, 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 you know? But other things happened in my life. As I said, 13 years old, my father molested me. 14 years old, my stepmother molested me. 15 years old, I lost all my front teeth in a gang fight. And 16 years old, I quit school and got my own apartment and said, the hell with everybody. I'm on my own. I'm going to do it myself. You know. And 17 years old, I decided I needed to become a man. So I went over and knocked on my mother's door and said, Mom, you got to sign these papers. I'm going into the Air Force. I'm going to become a man. And she signed the papers, and 3 days later, there I am, showed up at Sampson Air Force Base in Lake Geneva, New York. In December, it was 20 degrees below zero, and I knew I had made a bad career choice. Oh, Lord have mercy, you know. And, you know, I ran away from there. Now, the Air Force is very, very nice because they send people out to bring you back, you know, so you get free transportation, you know. And that happened with sickening regularity with my career. And, you know, they said they couldn't do very much with me, so they decided to ship my ass off to the Philippines. So I went to the Philippines, and the first night there, 18 years old, first night there, I went into town, and there she was. Beautiful, shiny black hair. She was a bar girl, and I just fell in love, you know? Her and San Miguel beer, yeah! Because 18 years old, you don't get to drink too damn much, you know? So that was a chance to really put it on, you know? 2 weeks later, we moved in together, and that started our little life going. And, you know, the life for the next 18 months, I remember with a lot of drinking, a lot of black market stuff. You know, I used to bring stuff from base and sell it in town constantly. I was amazed that I never got caught. You know, it was just, and 18 months there, they said, oh, by the way, you're due to go back to the U.S. now. And I said, no, I can't. My lady is pregnant. He said, yeah, you're going to go back. I said, okay. So I went into town, and she and I took off to the barrios, you know, and it was wonderful. Had fun back there, you know. People fed us, and, you know, it was ideal. There were a few times that we had to take off in the middle of the night because at that time the communist Hucks were battling the Philippine government, and so there were a few times that they heard there was an American in town and they wanted to come after me, so we had to sneak out at 2 o'clock in the morning and get the hell away from them. And I remember life was wonderful for a couple of months, you know. And I remember sitting out there, you know, eating a mango under the tree. Little river, waterfalls, was just beautiful. And in comes a couple of guys with guns, with AP insignias on their shirt, and said, you're coming back with us. And came back, and I only got 30 days in the stockade, which was wonderful. I loved it. You know, a little simple court-martial. But the problem was, the sergeant kept riding my ass in there. So I tried to slice him with a bowler knife. So they gave me another little court-martial. So I had another little term there. And by the time I got out, I went into town, and wouldn't you know it, the first Mrs. Barracks decided to have her child that night. And the midwife didn't make it there in time. So it was she and me, and baby makes three, you know. And the midwife shows up, and I says, here, you know. I didn't know what to do. And she took it, and everything was fine. And 2 months later, I shipped off, you know, and I looked at her from the troop ship that I was leaving on, and I kind of figured that I'd never see her again. So I did the only thing that I usually did, is that 3 months later, I married somebody else, you know. See, I couldn't live on my own. I had to pass my emotions on to somebody else. I couldn't face life just on myself. It had to be somebody else there. So, and over a short period of time, she had two children. You know, I don't know how that kept happening, but it did. And, you know, bless you. And I got to tell you, during that 5 years, I drank very few times. You know, I backed off it for some reason. And then I came out to, left her, came out to California. And 2 weeks later, I went to the Palladium to a dance, and I met her. you know, and we settled down together, and we had another child, and it was like, wow, you know. But see, she didn't want to get married. She said, no, she says, you're drinking too much. She says, if you stop drinking, I'll marry you. And I says, well, what if I just have one boys' night out each week? And she says, okay, I can do that. And so for the next 10 years, I drank once a week on boys' night out. My buddy Carlos and I would go out, and we'd suck down beer and shoot pool. And, you know, and typical of shooting pool with Carlos. Now, Carlos, I'd shoot my rack, and then he'd go over. He'd stand there ready to shoot. Then he'd stop for a minute, lean over, and puke, and then go back and do a shot. That's the type of folks that I hung around. And it was during this time that there were many times that I'd be waiting for my turn, and I'd suddenly realize that I had just sobered up. And I'd think, shit, I got to do this all over again. You know, I wasted all that money, and I just keep on drinking, and, you know. And after a while, that marriage went kaput. So I moved out, and I moved in temporarily for a week with my stepson, 18-year-old stepson. Now, I was 36 years old. Up until that time, I had only had booze. That was it. Didn't know what drugs were. Didn't know what one looked like, smelled like, tasted like, anything. But the first night there, he says, Jim, you got to try this. And he rolls El Mondo joint, turned down the lights, put on the strobe lights, and a little Jimi Hendrix, and said, you smoke it like this. I took a couple of tokes of that thing, and I could feel my hair growing long, you know? I'm going to become a hippie. This is what I need, you know? I don't have to drink anymore. I just have to get high on this stuff. This is great. And I says, how much is it? He says, $10 a lid. It was that raspy old stuff before Paraquat, you know? So I said, great, I'll take a pound, you know? So off I went on that stuff. But it was that raspy old stuff that you needed a beer between each joint because your throat got so raspy. You know, I don't know about you, but when you first started smoking marijuana, did anybody ever tell you about the munchies? You know, when about midnight, I'm down there at Pink's or Tommy's Chili Burgers, swaying in line with the other guys, waiting for that double chili cheeseburger, scarf that down, and drive home and pull out that frozen Sara Lee chocolate cake. Oh, man. You don't even want to wait for that sucker to defrost, you know. And I'm starting to put on weight. You know, so I went to my stepson. Now, my stepson stayed my pusher for the next 8 years. We kind of kept the money in the family, so to speak. You know, and I went to him, and, you know, after all, he's the expert on this stuff, you know. So I said, what do I need to do? I'm putting on all this weight. He says, hey, man, you got to take these little white pills. They're really fantastic. Okay, how much is a couple hundred, you know? So I started popping little white pills, mini bennies. Sure enough, 2 months later, I was down 50 pounds, you know. It just melted off me, you know. And there were days, you know, because I'd look and the light would come on and then the light would go off. And the light would come on. You know, and it was days just passing by, you know. And I went back to my stepson and I said, Stuart, this is really fantastic. I lost all this weight, 50 pounds. It's great. But my problem is that I come home on a Friday night and I party and I go to work on Monday and I haven't slept. What can I do? He says, man, you got to take these big white pills. They're called Quaaludes. Oh. So I said, okay, give me one. And I popped that and it was like putting foam on a fire. I loved Quaaludes, you know. I got to tell you that, see, I used to live in a Technicolor world, and I loved to go cruising. You know, after a six-pack of Michelob, few J's and say 1.5 Ludes, I go out and hop into my 71 Barracuda, pop her in the first, cruise around about 5 miles an hour. Well, you don't want to draw attention to yourself, you know. And come up to a stop sign, and I rear in somebody. But I hit him so soft. They just wave to me in the rear view mirror and drive away. And I just sit there and thank God, and just relax. You know, lights were a place to take a little nap on the way home. You know, and I'd look up and I'd watch the lights. You know, and I'd watch it go from green to yellow, then red, then green, then yellow, then red. You know, just mellow. You know, that's all I ever wanted was to be mellow. You know. Believe me, on the stuff that I was taking, if I had died, they would have said he mellowed to death. Lord. Now, during this time, friends of mine were starting to die off. Because after all, you don't deal with anybody else other than fellow dopers. You know, you don't want to. Friends were dying, they were committing suicide and so forth, and I felt kind of sad about the whole deal. You know, especially after, there was one time when John Lennon had died recently, and I felt so bad about that I took off work, went home, built up a little altar, burned incense, pulled out all my Beatles records, and played Beatles music all day long. And when I woke up and I saw all this mess, and I said, why? I don't even like the Beatles. It was just a chance to get drunk and cry and be maudlin, you know? And finally, I just said, I've had it with my life. I felt that I'd been everywhere, done everything. You know, I lived in the land of someday I'll, you know. Someday I'll go here, and someday I'll go there, and someday I'll do this, and someday I'll do this. And I never get off that damn couch, you know. And I says, this is it. I'm tired of my life. So, 44 years old, I pulled out 50 10 milligram Valium and put them on the coffee table, brought out a bottle of Stoli, a few J's, and went into my record room. Now, I don't know how many of you had record rooms. You might call it a second bedroom, but we called it a record room. You know, we're up on bricks and boards, and I had thousands of records in there, and I knew every single cut of every single record. you know, and I used to make tapes, you know, with about 15 different records, you know, one of this and there, little Monty Python here and a little, you know, and just put them together, and it was great, great for cruising. So I brought out 10 of my favorite artists, and a lot of them had gone before, like Jimi Hendrix and Janis Joplin. And I started with a little mood music. Freddie Fender's Wasted Days and Wasted Nights. You know, he started that Wasted Days and Wasted Nights, and I started plopping a little Blue Valium and crying, and oh, I felt so sad, you know, and about midnight I got long-distance telephonitis. You know, now I don't know about you, but somebody from around the block doesn't understand me half as well as somebody on the East Coast. You know, and don't they love us calling them at 3 a.m. their time? You know, calling up ex-bosses to tell them how to run their company. You know, called up, you know, an ex-wife back there, and Jesus. I remember one call, final indignity, where I called up this guy, and I says, "Hi, is this Joey Rotunda?" He says, "Yeah." He says, "Who's this?" I says, "This is Jim." He's Jim who? I used to sit behind you in second grade, and he hung up. Can you believe he hung up on me? Oh. But somewhere that night, I had this stone-cold sober thought, like, "Jim, this is a life and death decision you're making. Maybe you better sober up before you do it." And I staggered over, and I turned off the stereo, and I crashed, and when I woke up, I knew I was in deep trouble, so I called up ex-wife number four. Yeah, there was, number four came in and left, you know. Now, she knew all about psychological problems. She'd just gotten out of Patton State Hospital. She was getting shock treatments for her problems, you know. And she said, "Jim, you need a psychiatrist. I've been telling you that. You got psychological problems." So I called up a psychiatrist, and I said, "Look, here's my problem. Now, I make lists. I don't know about you, but I make lists." And I had a list all made out. I says, "Here's my problem. My girlfriend doesn't want to come back to me. My family doesn't want to talk to me. My job is trying to fire me. And I think I might be a budding alcoholic." And she said, "Come on in, we'll talk." And I went in there, and for the next 6 weeks, I'd dry swallow a couple of little Blue Valium, and I'd go up and tell her exactly what my problem is. And you know exactly what my problem was. It was my mother. It was my father. It was society. It was the Air Force. It was the job, the past. You know, all the bosses before, the ex-wives, the girlfriends, it was all their trouble. It was them. And I never saw those damn three fingers pointing back at me. Never. And we went through session after session, and one day I'm almost safely out the door. She says, "Jim, you said that you were drinking too much. Are you still drinking?" I said, "Well, yeah." She says, "Don't you think it's time you did something about it?" And I said, "Yeah, you're probably right." And I went out to my car, and I thought, I'm paying her $75 an hour, and she's telling me to go someplace else? Jesus. And I went home, and I thought about it, and I remembered AA. I remember one Saturday morning, about 9 o'clock in the morning, half-snockered, watching on AMC Days of Wine and Roses. And I remember, he went to AA. Now, I didn't want to stay sober. I just wanted to come in just to get the heat off my back, just to get some jingle back in my pocket, get a new girlfriend, and I'd go happily off, you know. So I called up AA, and they says, "Okay, now, go to a meeting. Can you go to this such and such meeting?" I was St. Augustine's, and I says, "Yeah." He says, "Now, get the big book and get a little yellow card called the 20 questions. And I said, "I can do that." So I told you what I looked like when I came in. I was one of the last living hippies in Los Angeles. I got that big book, and I got a little yellow card called the 20 questions. Now, I still have my 20 questions in my big book at home. It says, "Are you an alcoholic?" I dated it. At the time, it was September 4th, 1981. I got down to the bottom. I was delighted. I had an almost perfect score, 19 out of 20. I said, yeah. You know, I had only missed one. It said, "Have you ever had a complete loss of memory as a result of drinking?" I said, no, I couldn't remember. At the bottom of this sucker, it says, "If you have answered yes to three or more, you are definitely an alcoholic." Dang. But I put that as my bookmark in my big book. Thank God. Because my first couple of years, every once in a while, I'd be at a meeting, and speaker would get up there and say he was arrested 122 times with 7 felonies, and I'd say, I never got arrested. Or they talk about living on Skid Row for 5 years. I said, I never went to Skid Row. Or they talk about going through 20 detox centers, and I'd say, I never went to detox center. I came in and sat on my hands. I didn't dare let my company know because they would have fired me. I didn't want anybody to know. So every once in a while, I'd leave one of those meetings that I didn't identify with somebody, and I'd go home, and I'd pull out that 20 questions. I'd see 19 out of 20, and I'd say, oh, yes, you are. You know, and that little card kept myself sober a few times after meetings, thank God. Now, my first meeting was a Friday night, and somebody came over to me and said, okay, Monday up at Pacific Palisades, we need help setting up chairs. We want you to come over and set up chairs. And I said, no. He says, look, dummy, you don't understand. That's the way you're going to stay sober. I said, oh, okay, fine. What time do I show up? You know, I'll be there. So I showed up, and, you know, I was lining the chairs up perfectly on the, you know, cracks on the floor of the gymnasium, and, you know, everything was great. And then after a couple of weeks, they came over and chewed me out because I was chasing newcomers away because they weren't lining them up perfectly, you know. And they said, no, we share this with everybody, you know. Perfectionist, you know. I said, okay. And a couple of weeks later, somebody said at a different meeting, we need somebody to clean out the coffee pots in back. My hand is raised. Now, I don't know why. I don't drink coffee. I've had 4 cups in my life. I don't like the smell of it, the taste of it, or anything to do with it. And I'm back there every single Friday night cleaning out the coffee pots, happy as hell, you know? And I said, great, you know? I was about 2 months sober, and I went over to a old-timer. He had about 20 years sobriety, and I said, it says on page 14 and 15 that when Bill got very depressed and all, he went off to a hospital and talked to people there. How do I do that? He said, well, you got to be 6 months sober. I said, okay, when I'm 6 months sober, where do I go to sign up? And he told me, and I said, great. 6 months sober, I went down and signed up for 11 panels that first month. Oh, God. I wanted to spread this disease everywhere, you know? And it was great. I loved it. See, my first year, I went celibate. Now, I don't recommend it, but that's what I had to do. So I had plenty of time for service work. In fact, by the end of my first year, I had 12 regular commitments every month, you know, and I loved it. I just, you know, 6 months sober, one of my buddies that came in with me was confessing on himself and taking his chip off his chain, saying he had gone out. And he was the first one that I personally knew that went out. And I went out in the back of the place, and I started crying. First time I ever cried for somebody else. But I felt so sad for him, you know. Started going down the Skid Row right about that time, and it shook me to pieces. I'd never seen anything like that. I went back and told my sponsor, and my sponsor said, fine, you're going to go there for every month from now on. And so I did for about 30 years. You know, that's what I needed to do, because it was, it got me out of my comfort zone. I needed that. Because there were so many times. See, we come in here feeling full of shit. We hate ourselves. And going down there, when I was driving away, I could look in the rearview mirror and see it behind me and practically go, you were a good boy tonight. You were good, you know. There were times that people would say, you know, because I told them, I says, look, I says, every month, 25 people on Skid Row die right there in the streets. And I says, you're kidding. Don't they run out of them? I says, no, we keep supplying, you know. We keep supplying them. 1 year sober, I got up to the podium, angry, hostile. Got up, I said, okay, here I am. 45, sober, single, sexy, and celibate. Where to from here? I called up my sponsor and I said, where is she? I've been good for a year, damn it, where is she? She's getting ready for you. Your sponsor ever say dumb stuff like that to you? God. Okay, Jeannie, I believe you, you know. Sure enough, 2 weeks later, I'm over at Brentwood, 400 people milling about, and our eyes locked across the room. We drew each other like magnets. It was an ex-girlfriend. She says, Jim, I've got to make amends. I said, fine, your place or mine. She moved in the next day. Two weeks later, I was engaged. And 2 months later, I'm calling my sponsor saying, how can I get out of this? I don't want to be married again. Luckily, she was calling her sponsor saying, I don't want to get married. So we parted as friends. We're still Facebook friends. She lives in Texas with her husband, and, you know, that's nice. But that started me on relationships, you know. So I had a 2 month and a 4 month and a 6 month and a 10 year relationship, you know, and it's been wonderful, you know. Other things that happened, I mentioned H&I. H&I plays so big a part in my life. When I was 1 year sober, I remember we used to go take a panel to L.A. County Hospital. And we'd get the drunks out of the ward and bring them down to the room at the end. And we'd have to help them along because a lot of times they're pushing their IVs down the hall, you know, to go there. And I remember looking at this one guy, looking into his blank eyes and said, how are you? He says, I don't know. And I cried again. You know, I don't cry. My sponsor told me that's compassion. I didn't even know what the hell the word meant. But it's just, okay, fine. When I was 2 years sober, I went down to my Skid Row panel, and there's a guy sitting in the front row, One-Eyed Joe. I hadn't seen Joe at the Marina Center for 6 months or so. And during the break, I says, what are you doing down here, man? He says, hey, he says, I started drinking, lost my job, the old lady kicked me out. He says, I had no place else to go. And I haven't seen him since. That was 32 years ago. I'll back up just a little bit. I said I came in September 4th, 1981. I date my sobriety as December 3rd, 1981, which is the same time my belly button birthday. So December 3rd, I was 34 years sober and 79 years old. The day before that, a friend of mine got held up, got shot and killed in a holdup. They held up one of our Allstate offices in L.A. And somebody in the office was popping Valium, and I said, I'll take the little blue one, please. No, so I take my sobriety the day after that. Okay. Friend of mine, ex-girlfriend actually, calls me from Wyoming. She says, Jim, I can't make it back from my panel to Chino, YTS. She says, can you pick up the group and take them out? I says, okay. That's an hour and a half drive out to Chino from the west side. I says, okay. So I picked up the panel, drove out. Now, when you go on these panels, you've got a meeting in the car on the way, you've got the meeting there, and the meeting on the way back. I didn't identify or speak as the Allstate agent. I just introduced the speakers. And during the break, a young man came over to me. He says, hey, man, he says, I'm going to be in here for a long time. I said, okay. He says, yeah, he says, I needed money for drugs, so, you know, I robbed this Allstate office and killed somebody. I said, was his name Paul? He says, yeah, how did you know? I said, because I knew Paul very well. We were good friends. And we finished up, all held hands and said the Lord's Prayer. And on the way home, that hour and a half drive, the panel is merrily chatting, and inside my head, I'm going insane. Why me? Why me? Why did he talk to me? Why? I got home, and I hit my knees, as you taught me to do. And I stayed there, and I kept saying, God, why me? Why me? And a voice about as loud as mine is right now said, Jim, were you understanding the kid? I said, yes, Lord. Were you accepting the kid? I said, yes, Lord. He said, were you loving the kid? And I said, yes, Lord. He said, how much more do you think that I understand and accept and love you? And the weight of the world lifted off my shoulders. I was 47 years old, and for the first time in my life, I could look in the mirror and like what I saw. It was just, that's not what I came in here for. I came in here just to get the heat off for a little while. But I became a whole new person. I'm going to jump over to family. I've had four kids. Got eight grandkids. God knows how many great-grandkids. I know I don't look old enough, but I do. I've been somewhere for a long time, so apparently they've been out there breeding somewhere. And when I was 5 years sober, my daughter called me, 21-year-old daughter. She was living out in San Bernardino. She said, Dad, things are getting kind of hot out here. Can I come stay with you? Now, I said, sure, come on over. Now, she had already gotten a DUI. She'd already crashed a car that I gave her. So she came out and for right around Christmas time and New Year's, I went out to my party. She went out to her party. And New Year's morning, I woke up and she was passed out on the bathroom floor. I couldn't get in. So I did what any normal person does. I went to a morning meeting and picked up a 20 questions. Came home, waited for her to wake up, and I says, here, honey. She finished. She says, gee, Dad, not bad. I only got 14. I says, I got a program for you. January 25th, she'll have 29 years. So we do sometimes make it. The two kids back east I tried to make amends to, and they didn't want to talk to me. I could hear them in the background. We don't want to talk to him. It's okay. I let it in God's hands, God's time. When I was 10 years sober, I'd just been out speaking at Barstow. That's 20 miles beyond any lengths. And I said, once a month they have a speaker meeting where it's a potluck. So you're up there speaking, and 200 family members are all out there eating, listening to you, you know? And of course, the fog was heavy on the way home, and my girlfriend's got the screaming Mimi. She's digging her fingernails into my hand. crash, you know. No, no, no. Get home, it's about midnight, and the phone starts ringing, and I went over and answered the phone. I said, yeah. Voice says, hi, is this Jim Barracks? And I says, yeah. He says, this is Jim Barracks III, how are you? I says, who? He says, this is your son back in Buffalo, how are you? He says, I figured it was been 25 years since we talked, maybe it was time to reach out and see what you're really like. And we shared for the next 45 minutes, and I told him about you. And I told him how you brought me in and sat me on your lap and loved me until I could love myself. At the end of the 45 minutes, he says, Jim, he says, here's my phone number. Feel free to call anytime you want to. You know, it was like, later on, I flew back to Buffalo and made personal amends to him and the grandkids back there. And I said, so how about your sister? Is she ready? He says, no, she's not ready. It's okay. 14 years sober, I get home from a meeting, and there's an email. Hey, Dad, I just visited your website. Good pictures, you know. Here's my phone number. Feel free to call. Kathy, my daughter back in Buffalo. So I picked up the phone and called up. I said, hi, this is Jim. She says, that's okay. You can say, Dad, we know you're dysfunctional. That's a nice N word today, you know. But I got to tell you that I've been living in a dysfunctional household the last 34 years. And I've been living single for the last 34 years, so. She paid me a compliment a couple of years later. She's dead, I just realized. She says, you're not dysfunctional. You just function differently. I said, okay. 15 years sober, I get home, and there's an email waiting for me. I have a copy here. August 28th, 1997. Greetings. I was just wondering if you could please help me out. I'm looking for a possible relative. My father was stationed at Clark Air Force Base, Philippines, around 1954 to 1957. His name is James Barracks. Da-da-da-da-da-da. My adopted name since I was 3 months old is Eduardo. I sat down and sent off an email to him, and I said, dear son, I've been looking for you for all these years. Because I couldn't make amends to him, I had gone through the Pearl Buck Foundation and sponsored a kid over in the Philippines for 16 years. Because that's what we do. We make living amends to others. And that since I wasn't there to support him, I was there to support somebody else in the Philippines. And as we're emailing back and forth, I told him about you. Because after all, you're an integral part of my life. And he says, how did you stop drinking? He says, I've tried 1,000 times. I said, really? Do you read English? He says, yes. So I got a big book and 20 questions, and I hopped a plane. Now, I got to tell you, I'm not wild about traveling. But one of the nice things about this program, at the time I was sponsoring about 25 or 30 people, and one of them had money to match mine, and he says, hey, I'll go with you. So we made a thing of it. We went to the Philippines and Bangkok and Singapore and Hong Kong and just had a ball. But when I got there, I gave him the 20 questions, and he got done. He says, gee, not bad. I only got 16. I said, great. So I looked it up. I found local AA meetings there in Angeles City in Philippines, and we went there, and I ended up being their guest speaker that week, and I introduced him to them and they to him. Now, he says he's sober. I don't know, but that was 1997, so he may still be. I don't know. I could never have made amends to him or seen the 5 grandchildren there if I hadn't stayed sober. Now, this program brings us a whole lot. the job that was trying to fire me, the boss that had it in for me, not only did he make sure that I got into my own office with the support staff, but he ended up taping me and sending out a tape on how to run an Allstate office successfully nationwide to thousands of agents all over the nation. That blew me away too. Just, you know, wow. I went from practically failing to one of the top agents in California just because of that. And of course, I hired normies. I didn't think that an ego as large as mine should work in my office with me. So, I'll tell you this one little story. There was a gal that I had hired for a few years. Her name was Jackie. She had the biggest green eyes you've ever seen. Now, I had a bad cold, laryngitis for about a week, and I'm driving to work one day, and I'm starting to think on the way, you know, I've got to go see a throat doctor. But the only doctor that I know is Dr. Calcaterra, and my ex-girlfriend works for him. So if I start going to him, I'm going to have to start dating her again. That's what we do. But he's going to take one look at my throat and say, you've got cancer, and he's going to rip it out. So I'm going to want to overdose on pills and die of suicide. But if I do, will they say that I slipped? And I get to the office, and the first of the kids start calling me, you know, in the morning, and I'm laying this off on them. And her big green eyes are getting bigger and bigger by the minute. And finally, when one of the calls in, she says, Jim, were you really thinking about committing suicide? I said, well, yeah. She's, I've never known anybody that thought about committing suicide. I said, really? Everyone I know thinks about committing suicide. You know, and when she gets a flat tire, she calls AAA. I call suicide prevention. You know? But see, little at a time, my life got together. Little at a time, all I had to do was work these steps. I had problems with relationships. Problems with you, with me, and with God. I discovered in chapter 5, in the fifth step, it says admitted to God for forgiveness, to ourselves for understanding, to another human being for humility. That took care of the problem with three types of relationships, with you, me, and with God. Great. Got through the rest of the steps. And I discovered something there, is that I had this little thing called a conscience. And every time that I woke up from a drunk, it would be sitting on the headboard waiting for me to wake up. I'd say, you know what you did last night? How about last week, last month, last year, 5 years, 10 years, 20 years ago? Nah, 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 nah. And I drank to keep the little bastard quiet. But I come in here and you say, I can't do that. There was a holy man many thousands of years ago that said, we are not punished for our sins, we are punished by our sins. And how true that is for us. Because we had that little thing inside us called a conscience. And that conscience just drove us on, you know? That same holy man, young man, went over to, and he says, how can I find peace and contentment in my life? Without a second word, the holy man grabbed the young man's hand and led him into the river. They got to the river. And he grabbed the young man's head and he shoved him under the water and he kept him under there. And he finally let him up and he says, what was your number one thought? He says, I wanted air. And the holy man says, if you want peace and contentment in your life as much as you wanted air, then you'll find it. My friends, the same thing holds true here. If you want the peace and contentment of this sobriety, you have to want it more than life itself. More than anything else in your life, it has to be number one. When you have that, then you will find the peace and contentment that we have. And with that, I will leave you with my final prayer. I love this prayer because it means so much to me. And that is that I might wish you wealth, or I might wish you health, or that good fortune would caress you, but wealth might bring sorrow. Good health could fail tomorrow. So I'll simply say, God bless you. Thank you. All right.